The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher. Welcome back to another week of NFL coverage here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. Week 4 is officially in the bags, and you thought you knew, but you had no idea. Man, oh man, what a crazy NFL season it has been so far. 4 weeks in, and there's only one team left undefeated standing, while the rest of the league look like they're hovering around at 2-2. But don't worry, we're going to go over every single matchup from week 4 in the NFL, as well as look ahead into week 5 in our weekly betting segment, Straight Cash Homie, where we look at every single matchup by the point spread to try to win you some money every single weekend here on the Bay's Golden Days. But being the Bay's Golden Days, of course, we're going to talk about the Oakland Raiders first. And oh man, just when you thought things couldn't get worse for the Raiders after an embarrassing Sunday night loss, we come home and lose to the Broncos. Man, I hate the Broncos. And the only man who can express my hate for the Broncos enough is Samuel L. Jackson. Hate, 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 hate.
Do you know what it's like to really hate someone? I mean, really hate them. With a passion, a fury, a vengeance. You know what I'm talking about? Well, these guys do.
You gotta come on.
The Raiders and Broncos. They can't stand each other. Like, good hates evil. Boom, boom, boom. And evil hates good. They shared players and coaches. Now tell me that don't breed contempt. What if you yard sale some old drawings to a neighbor up the street and they turned out to be Da Vinci's? You hate his guts, right? You're damn right you would.
And we're just talking about some ink on paper. Now what if the stakes were playoffs, championships, respect, huh? Now you don't just hate them.
You want to hit them.
You want to bury them in the turf. You want them looking through their ear hole. You want to say, I like your teeth, especially the ones scattered around the 20-yard line. You want their mamas to say, oh no, that's not my child. My child has a face. Well, that's what's going on here tonight. There are Raiders, there are Broncos, there's an enclosed space, there's piles and piles of hate, and there's you. So I ask you, are you ready for some football?
There are Raiders, there are Broncos, and there are pounds and pounds of hate, and I will challenge you to find someone who hates the Donkeys more than me. I cannot stand the Denver Donkeys, whether it's seeing Mr. Ed, the talking horse, Shannon Sharpe on TV every weekend, now every day on that terrible talk show, or seeing Tim Tebow get on his knees and somehow praise way the Broncos into the playoffs. I cannot stand Denver. But here we are once again, the Denver Broncos winning in Denver 16-10 against the Raiders. But I shouldn't even say once again because the all-time record is still in the Raiders' favor. The Raiders lead all-time 62-52 against those Denver Donkeys. But let's talk about week 4 in the NFL where the Broncos were able to pull off the upset win. Let's hop straight into the first quarter where the Raiders decide they wanted to kick the ball. And I thought that was a good idea because against this loud atmosphere from Denver, the place was rocking. Tony Romo said he's never felt anything like that from a broadcasting booth, but hey, it was not enough to silence the Raiders in their first defensive series as they went 3 and out, and Mario Edwards Jr. has a huge sack. But immediately Denver's defense has something to say about it as they force the Raiders into a 3 and out as well on their first offensive series. And this is looking like it's going to be a true defensive battle, the way that both these defenses came out flying around on the field until we got to Denver's second drive of the day, which ended up being their only touchdown drive of the day. They went 88 yards in 7 plays for their only touchdown as Trevor Siemian threw a couple floaters. I'm talking about grab your life vest, because we had some straight floaters in the air, and somehow the Broncos came down with both of them. I'm talking about the wide receivers from Denver didn't even know who he was throwing the ball to. hey, some risky throws for Simeon, but they paid off, and they were able to top off that drive with a touchdown, like I said, on an A.J. Derby circus one-handed catch on a 22-yard touchdown. He beats Markell Lee on a wheel route where he lines up as a fullback out of the backfield. I knew this was going to be a huge mismatch. We all know about our linebackers trying to cover tight ends. Well, they also can't cover tight ends out of the backfield. We got beat a couple plays in a row on both those wheel routes where they were just trying to get down the field and use their speeds. This is something I would like to see what the Raiders do, using their mismatch from their faster running back to mismatch against Denver's linebackers, but we'll get more into that later. As for the rest of the first quarter, it was more of the same for the Raiders offense with more three and outs, and Marshawn Lynch was beginning to get bottled up, and Denver ends the first quarter with a field goal to put him up 10-0. We then move to the second quarter where the Raiders offense finally starts moving. Derek Carr connects with Jared Cook a couple times. Seth Robert gets a couple catches, and it sets up a 4th-and-1 at Denver's 31-yard line, and Black Jack Del Rio. We all know how big Jack Del Rio's balls are, and we've already seen him convert a few times on 4th-and-1 this year with Marshawn Lynch. So, of course, he goes for it, but Marshawn Lynch is stuffed. He gets absolutely bottled up by that Denver rush defense. It was a no-fly zone before. Now it's looking like a no-run zone this year. Marshawn gets bottled up, and I like the aggressiveness of the call on 4th-and-1. But I also think we should have took the points right there. We're already down 2 possessions. It was a 10-0 game. We could have took the points to make it a 1-possession game. But no, we're down 10-0. Turned the ball over. Gave it right back to Denver. But our defense holds, and we actually get the ball back to get another chance to put some points up before the second quarter ends. And the Raiders have their best drive of the day, going 99 yards in 5 plays. And it's all capped up by a 64-yard touchdown bomb to Johnny Holton. I talked about Johnny Holton on the podcast last week, getting a huge fumble recovery. Now we see Johnny Holton getting his first receiving touchdown. He had to step up big with no Crabtree and Cooper being double coverage the whole day. Great moment for Johnny Holton, and the Raiders are only down 10-7 at halftime, and it's looking like we still got a chance in this game. But then everything started to go downhill. The Raiders opened up the second half with 2 back-to-back 3 and outs, while Denver added 2 more field goals to the game to go up 16-7. And just when it looked like things couldn't get any worse, down goes Derek. Down goes Derek Carr. Why, God? Why? He's a good Christian faithful man. Why do you got to keep taking Derek Carr away from us? He goes down in the middle of the third quarter. He took a knee to the back, was kind of twisted up awkwardly. It was first diagnosed as a strained back. Then we heard that it's a transverse process fracture. Hey, we'll get more into that at the end of this breakdown. But man, oh man. What a terrible moment for the Raiders, seeing Derek Carr go down once again. And then to finish off the drive, we go with a fake punt. Marquette King gets tackled in the backfield, gets a flag for throwing the ball to Denver, and I'm ready to just turn my TV off this point. I'm so disappointed. Like I said in the beginning of this segment, I hate Denver. I hate the Donkeys. And now our team is just falling apart right before my very eyes. It was just tragic to watch. Let's go to that fourth quarter, because after that fake punt by Marquette King, like I said, Denver got the ball back on their own 19-yard line. All they had to do was score any type of point, and the game would have pretty much went over. But once again, Khalil Mack and his defense comes up huge. They force a field goal opportunity, and Denver misses. We're still down 16-7. EJ Manuel, it's your time to shine. Even though on his first drive, he did go 3 and out, and Von Miller got his only sack of the day with a nice little defensive hold call on Marshall Newhouse that Denver just happened to so-called miss so that Von Miller could get his sack. But I won't even want to rant about that. Khalil Mack obviously had a better day than Von Miller. And once we were able to slow down Von Miller, Jermaine Olawale, our fullback, came in, had a couple of huge blocks on Von Miller. He was just lining up, falling around like a lost puppy, getting chips on him every single play. And EJ Manuel drives the field 73 yards in 9 plays, hits Jared Cook for 28 yards, hits Slot Roberts for 22 yards. And then we get 3rd-and-10 in Denver's red zone, and Jared Cook drops a touchdown pass that was right in his hands. He got crocodile arms. He thought he was going to get hit. It didn't matter. He still got hit. Jared Cook, you've had some great plays so far as a Raider. This has been kind of the concern over your whole career, where you've made spectacular catches out of nowhere, but you can't catch the one when it matters. And this would have been a huge touchdown for the Raiders, but they had to settle for 3. And all of a sudden, it's a 1-possession game as the Raiders are only down 16-10. And my man Khalil Mack, once again, keeping the defense in this game, keeping the whole entire Raiders team in this game as the Raiders defense comes up with another huge 3-and-out. Then we got 4 minutes left, 4th quarter, down by 6. EJ Manuel, enter Jesus, come save us. He's driving down the field in Denver territory. He has Amari Cooper beat down the sideline 1-on-1. and he doesn't look off the safety, and he throws an INT, and the game's over. He had Amari Cooper beat. If he would have looked off the safety, done a pump fake, something, he probably could have hit him. But regardless, I like the shot downfield. But Amari Cooper, you've got to go up and bat down that ball. You've got to go up and battle. The game's on the line. If you can't get to it, turn into a defender. Be that DB. High point the ball yourself. Hell, get an offensive pass interference. Do whatever you have to do to stay in that game. And that's what exactly what Amari Cooper said after the game. He said, yeah, I should have gone up. I should have at least contested it. Should have broke it up. And those is one of the plays you've got to make. And that's what you learn from experience. Like I said, Amari Cooper was being double coverage the whole entire game. Was being followed by a safety over the top with no Crabtree. It was up to guys like Slot Roberts, like Johnny Holton to step up in this game. But unfortunately, the Raiders cannot pull it off as we lose 16-10. But let me just throw out a couple scenarios for you. As I mentioned, Jared Cook's drop was huge. If he would have caught that touchdown pass on that second to last drive, the Raiders would have only been down 2 points on that final drive where Denver had a terrible punt, set us up at the 50, and all we would have needed was a field goal to get the win. It would have been 16-14. We are already in Denver's territory. Giorgio Tavecchio has looked great so far as a rookie. All we would have needed was a field goal, but of course, coulda, woulda, shoulda. No, we didn't get that. We needed a touchdown to win the game, and we ended up throwing a huge INT to end it, lose in Denver, and drop the 2-2 in the AFC West. The Broncos are now 3-1, and as I've mentioned, there's only one undefeated team in the league. That is the Kansas City Chiefs, and man, oh man, let's look at the outlook for the Raiders after week four, because Derek Carr, as I mentioned, goes down with that transverse process fracture. He took that knee to the back, and people are actually saying that he took it to the kidney, which made his legs go numb. This is scary whenever you talk about a back injury. He's already been ruled out for this upcoming week against the Ravens. They're saying he's going to be out 2 to 6 weeks. Well, let me give you some background history. This was also a similar injury to Tony Romo's. Everybody's, whoa, Tony Romo's back. He's done ever. But Tony Romo had multiple back injuries. And when this specific transverse process fracture happened to Tony Romo, he only missed one game. When this transverse process fracture happened to Cam Newton, he only missed one game. So I'm not freaking out. I don't think Derek's dead. I think he's going to heal up, sit out this week against the Ravens. Hopefully we get him back against the Chargers. If not, the following week we play the Chiefs. I absolutely want him back by the time we play the Chiefs. But until then, it's going to be E.J. Manuel. And E.J. Manuel honestly didn't even look that bad. He ended the day 11 for 17 with 106 yards, no touchdowns, and that one big INT. But if you would have flipped the scenarios, like I said, he could have had a touchdown and been going for the game-winning field. Goal. Compare those stats to Derek Carr. Derek was 10 for 18, 143 with that one huge touchdown. We know 64 of those yards came on that one big bomb to Johnny Holton. But E.J. Manuel, I will say, he looked more confident out there than Connor Cook did in the playoff game. Maddie McGloin's gone. Connor Cook only played one game, only got one game experience. E.J. Manuel, at least he knows his offense. Todd Downing in his first year as the offensive coordinator being promoted from that quarterback coach role. Todd Downing used to coach E.J. Manuel back in Buffalo before he came here. He was the quarterback there. So him and Todd Downing have a great relationship, but they're going to need to figure some things out, because now with E.J. Manuel at quarterback, Todd Downing, I haven't been impressed so far since you've taken over from Bill Musgrave. I don't know if that played into the factor of Denver being able to shut down the Raiders' offense so easily. If Todd Downing is still running some of the similar stuff that Bill Musgrave had last year, because Bill Musgrave is now actually on the coaching staff for the Denver Broncos. A little bit of collusion. We talked about all that hate, Samuel Jackson. Hate, 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 hate. But honestly, the biggest thing I'm hating right now for the Oakland Raiders is the way that this offensive line is playing, because I'm just so confused. Where is the offensive line from last year? Where is this highest paid offensive line in the league? Where is this top three line that just bully people, had fantastic pass protection, would move bodies in the run game? I know we've played two great defensive lines back-to-back games. The Redskins' defensive line actually looked better than Denver's defensive line, but Denver's overall defense is one of the top units in the league, no doubt about it. But this offensive line, I can't put the blame for Derek Carr's injury on them, because honestly, I thought Derek could have got rid of the ball a little bit earlier. He stepped up in the pocket, avoided three guys, and it was actually the fourth guy who hit him, which caused the injury. But regardless, Derek, if you're not getting rid of the ball or not, this offensive line has to play better, because we got absolutely shut down in the run game. Marshawn Lynch was bottled up for 9 carries for 12 yards. Yes, 9 carries for 12 yards. We only ran the ball 15 times. Where's Rashard? Where's Washington? Where's his running back by committee? Where's his top-ranked offensive line? This doesn't make sense. This doesn't look like the Raiders. I don't even want to address the rumors that the offensive line was throwing games for Derek Carr, because that's the most bullshit thing I've ever heard in my life. And if you believe that, turn off this podcast and go put on InfoWars and listen to some more conspiracy theories, because that's absolutely bullshit. KO, Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson, Donald Penn, Marshall Newhouse, you are all struggling. And I think that is the biggest factor of what's happened to this offense this past two games. We can't get into momentum. We can't get into any game flow. We were 2 for 12 on third down. Last week, we were, what, 0 for 11, 0 for 10? So, what, we're 2 for 22 on third down conversions over the past 2 weeks? It doesn't help when you're 0 for 3 on fourth down. Also, this Raiders offense continues to struggle. Yes, there was no Michael Crabtree. He has the bruised lung. Hopefully, he can return. But Amari Cooper, you need to step up, kid. Everybody's been dogging you for all these drops, and I've tried to defend you as much as I can. But Amari Cooper, you were a top 10 draft pick in the NFL draft. You've got to make that transition to becoming an elite wide receiver. We got to put the ball in this guy's hands. Just try to make some plays. I don't care if it's got to be wide receiver screens. Where's all these slant passes that he was beating everybody last year on these one cuts? I know he's been dropping a lot of balls, but we got to put the ball in our playmaker's hands, because with EJ Manuel, we're going to need all the help from this offense as possible. I'm looking for Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington to get some more carries. Marshawn, as I mentioned, you can't run the ball 15 times a game and win the game. We lost the time of possession battle once again. I look for more of a running back by committee going into the next week. We're going to have to run the ball if we want to win with EJ Manuel, because we honestly could have won this game. I've said it so many times this year. Anytime the Raiders defense lets up less than 21 points, we should win the game. And the Raiders defense honestly did keep us in this game. And this was a defense without our first round draft pick, Gerrion Conley, without our second round draft pick, Obi, and without David Amerson. He got hurt in the game. This was a defensive backfield that should have been torched, but Trevor Siemian, like I said, was floating ducks up. Everyone wants to talk about his progression. Yeah, I think he looked decent, but he should have torn up our defense. But our defense really did keep us in this game. Mario Edwards Jr. and Khalil Mack, as I've mentioned a couple times so far, they dominated that defensive line and kept us in this game. Khalil Mack had 7 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks, 7 quarterback pressures, and he should have had a strip sack too, but it was overcalled by the refs, and the Denver Broncos offensive line could not stop them. I called out the matchup. Melnick Watson, the ex-Raider, was going to get eaten alive, and that's exactly what Khalil Mack did. And then they tried bringing the fullback, the running back, the tight end, the chip blocks. It doesn't matter. Double teams, and he was running straight through him. Khalil Mack, defensive player of the year, and I will put my balls down on the line and say that he is better than Von Miller, played better than Von Miller, didn't need Mario Edwards Jr. to hold the offensive line for him to get a sack, because Mario Edwards Jr. was getting his own sacks on his own time. Tackle for a loss, lining up next to Khalil Mack. I talked about it all last year on our podcast about how excited I was to see Mario Edwards Jr. return, and now he looks like that full form that he was before the injury. Hey, Corey James led the team with 10 tackles. He's playing so-so coverage. Markell Lee looked good against the run, looked bad against the pass, but this is a team where, like I said, 16 points, the Raiders offense should be able to put up 16 points easily, and we should have won this game. We should have won in Denver. God damn it, I hate the Donkeys, but it's all right. They're a division rivalry. We get to play them 2 times a year, and they got to come back to Oakland 1 time. Hopefully, Derek Carr will be back, and hopefully, Town Business will be back in the motherfucking building, because we got some things to figure out, Raider Nation. It's 2-2. I'm not overreacting. I still think the Raiders are going to win the AFC West. I still think they're going to get to the playoffs. Yeah, I said it. I don't care if the Chiefs are undefeated. I don't care if the Broncos are ahead of us right now. It's a long season. Everybody wants to overreact and start crying. Oh, Derek Carr's injury prone. Marshawn Lynch, why? Well, hey, I want you to remember those opinions right now in week 4 of the NFL season. Come talk to me in 10 weeks, and we'll see where the hell the Oakland Raiders are at, and I'll guarantee you it'll be looking for a playoff ticket. Let's go, Raider Nation, baby. But before I get too hyped up and I already start breaking down this next week matchup against the Baltimore Ravens, let's go ahead and review all the matchups from week 4 in the NFL against the point spread. Let's see where you made you some money, and let's go ahead and look at the preview for week 4 by the numbers.
It's time for the NFL numbers week 4 preview. 83 combined rushing yards the Broncos gave up to Melvin Gordon, Ezekiel Elliott, and LeSean McCoy this season. Marshawn Lynch faces them on Sunday. 158.3 passer rating when Sammy Watkins is targeted, tops among all qualified players. 36 total targets between Odell Beckham Beckham Jr. and Mike Evans in their last meeting in 2015. 30.51 fantasy points Kareem Hunt needs to set the record for most by a non-quarterback through the first four games of a season.
Hold on to your hats! He's done it again! Long touchdown run!
592 combined receiving yards for Vikings wideouts Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. That's more receiving yards than six NFL teams have totaled this year. 461 total yards per game the Patriots have allowed, putting them on pace for worst total defense since the merger. 9 miles between Jay Ajayi's childhood home and Wembley Stadium, where he'll face the Saints this weekend. And that's the NFL Numbers Week 4 preview.
Week 4 is in the bags, and as I've mentioned so far, there's only one undefeated team left in the NFL, so let's go ahead and kick it off with the Kansas City Chiefs playing on Monday Night Football against the Washington Redskins, and man, oh man, this was one hell of a matchup. As I mentioned, the Redskins took care of the Raiders last week on Sunday Night Football, getting back-to-back primetime games, and they came out to play against the Chiefs. They went up early in the first quarter as Terrell Pryor gets up and over Marcus Peters for his first touchdown of the season. Shout out to Terrell Pryor, the ex-Raider, but it was the Kansas City Chiefs led by Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt in that second half to make a second half comeback. Hunt had 21 carries for 101 yards once again, and Travis Kelce was 7 catches for 111 yards. And man, I told you, take the Chiefs in the bets, and this is one of the craziest bets of the season. The Chiefs were favored by a touchdown, and they ended up winning by 9 points. 29-20, but don't let this score fool you. If you didn't watch the game, it was 20-20 until the Chiefs hit a field goal at the very end of the game. The Washington Redskins had one more chance with only a couple seconds left on the clock. They tried to do some shoots and ladder, lateral and pitches play where I think they're hoping for the Stanford band to run on the field, but who knows what they're doing. They end up fumbling the ball, and the Kansas City Chiefs scoop and score for a touchdown to cover the 7-point spread and win by 9 points. Man, Monday Night Football, that's straight cash for your homie, cashing in with the Chiefs. As much as I wanted to see him lose, hey, we still won you some money. So let's go ahead and move on and look at the rest of the AFC West now. We've talked about Raiders, Broncos, and Chiefs. That means there's only one team left, and that's the Los Angeles Chargers. And if you've been listening to the podcast so far this year, I have been dogging on LA, and the dogging is not going to stop now as the Chargers lose once again. This was a game they were favored by 2 points, and I told you to take the Eagles, and hey, the bets paid out once again, because it was not only the Eagles who showed up to play, it was the Eagles fan base, as they absolutely took over LA. Reports were there was at least 70 to 75% Eagles fans when they had the chant for Let's Go Chargers on the screen. All you could hear is, "Let's go Eagles, let's go Eagles." Look up for the video for yourself. It was hilarious, and Chargers fans are still mad for the move to LA. The San Diego sign guy, the guy who's been flying around the signs on his plane, strikes once again, and this one was probably my favorite so far. He said, "Dean Spanos, you want to see a sellout? Look in the mirror." Oh, what happened to hashtag football is family? No, football is a business. Football is all about money. The Chargers got taken out of San Diego, just like the Rams got taken out of St. Louis, just like the Raiders are about to be taken out to Bay. It is a travesty what's going on in the NFL, but we're here to talk about the scores, not politics. So let's talk about this Eagles game, as Carson Wentz looked great, 242 yards and a touchdown, and it was LeGarrette Blount. Finally rolled one up and sparked it into the end zone. 16 carries, 136 yards. Have a day, LeGarrette Blount, and they took care of the Chargers with ease, 26-24. And then if we're talking about the Eagles, let's go ahead and keep it moving with the NFC East, as the Cowboys lose an upset special to the Rams, 35-30. The Rams have the league-leading offense in the NFL, averaging 35.5 points a game. And Todd Gurley, have yourself a game, young man. He was on NFL Network just a week ago talking shit to Michael Irvin, saying, "Hey, we're about to put it on your boys," and boy did he put it on them, not only with 23 carries for 121 yards, but 7 catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown. This is the Gurley man we've all been waiting for. With Jared Goff's improvement, 255 yards and 2 touchdowns, I think it's huge that they finally got him some wide receivers. Cooper Kupp has been great so far as a rookie, and we all know what Sammy Watkins could do, as this offense is finally coming together. This is one of the worst offenses in the league last year, but now it's looking pretty great. I mean, they still have only beat the Colts, the Niners, and now the Cowboys, which is pretty impressive. But this was a Cowboys defense that was missing their defense. They were missing Sean Lee. Sean Lee is the Dallas defense, and without him, it really showed. Todd Gurley has one amazing day. Dak Prescott threw for 252 yards, 3 touchdowns, but what had one crucial INT as Ezekiel Elliott is limited to 85 yards on 21 carries. He found the end zone, but the Cowboys just simply did not have enough firepower, and they just really did not have enough time in the game as the Rams get a huge win, 35-30. But before we talk about the NFC West, let's go ahead and finish off the NFC East. The New York Giants have now lost 4 in a row. They lost 5 games last year and now start the year off 0-4. They lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 25-23. And what truly was an entertaining game that went back and forth, back and forth. Jameis Winston throws for 332 yards and 3 touchdowns. His huge touchdown came late to Cameron Brate, who had 4 catches, 80 yards, and a touchdown. But Mike Evans had one hell of a day as he battles back and forth with Odell Beckham, who had 7 catches, 90 yards. But it wasn't enough because him and Eli could not connect on that 2-point conversion late in the game, and they ended up losing by 2 points. Surprise, surprise, as the Buccaneers, no more Robert Aguayo. They got the game-winning field goal kick in the last second, so improved to 2-1 and got a huge win against the Giants as the Giants continue to struggle and struggle and struggle while the rest of this NFC East is really taking off and separating themselves from the pack, and it's looking more and more likely like the Giants are not going to repeat as NFC East champions. But let's look at the AFC East as we might have a new champion. Nah, I'm not going to go that too far, but we do got a new team in first place, and that is the Buffalo Bills. Yes, the Buffalo Bills have a better record than the New England Patriots. Put it on the news. Put it on the tabloids. The New York Jets got the same record as the New England Patriots, but the Bills pulled off a huge victory, 23-17 over the Falcons in a game nobody picked the Bills to win. Literally nobody picked. And LeSean McCoy said, hey, y'all thought they were going to win. Go talk to the winners. He went on a huge rant, and he deserved it because honestly, who did pick the Bills? Who picked the Bills to be 3-1 this year? This is just more into the theory that no one knows what the hell was going on in the NFL because, man, we finally got some parity in the NFL, and you think it was a good thing, but it's a bad thing for bettors because the Bills probably pulled off the biggest upset of the day, and it was just bad news all day for the Falcons as Matt Ryan struggled, threw for 242 yards, only 1 touchdown, 2 INTs, also had a fumble that was taken back to the house, and Julio Jones and Sanu both went down. He was kind of struggling to find a wide receiver. Tevin Coleman was his leading receiver with 4 catches, 65 yards, but it has been nothing but this Buffalo Bills defense. I talked about it in our preview podcast. They're one of the top scoring defenses in the league, most yards allowed, least yards allowed. They have been playing phenomenally with this coach. They have been really influenced. LeSean McCoy had 20 carries, 76 yards. Tyrod Taylor is still getting it done with 182 yards and a touchdown with Charles Clay. I mean, this was a team that it looked like they traded away all their talent. They got rid of Stephon Gilmore, got rid of Sammy Watkins. It looked like they're just literally handing all their players to the New England Patriots, and now they have a better record than the Patriots. None of this makes sense, but let's go ahead and talk about the Patriots game, because if the Bills wasn't the biggest upset of the week, this definitely was. It's the Carolina Panthers went into Foxborough, went into New England, and got the victory 33-30. And man, I talked about this Patriots defense. They have yet to cover a spread all year, so I told you take the Panthers in the points, and it paid out once again as Cam Newton has a huge day, throwing for 316 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, but did add another rushing touchdown to become the first quarterback ever to have 50 rushing touchdowns. And everybody was thinking Cam was broken down, beat up. What's wrong with his shoulder? What's wrong with Cam? Well, he looked like Super Cam this weekend against the Patriots as he has a huge game. He was helped out by Kelvin Benjamin at 4 catches, 104 yards. Devin Funchess was being used a lot. He had a touchdown catch, as well as Jonathan Stewart had 14 carries for 68 yards, passing D'Angelo Williams for number one all time for rushing leader for the Carolina Panthers franchise. And this Carolina Panthers offense honestly just had their way with the Patriots defense. The Patriots defense has now allowed 121 points through the first 4 games of the season. I don't care if Tom Brady's throwing for 307 yards and 2 touchdowns, or if he's throwing for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns every game. And when your defense is that bad, how did this team win a Super Bowl last year? I thought they were overrated when they were the number one scoring defense last year. I didn't think their defense was all that good, and it showed in the first half against the Falcons. And now here we are a year later when everybody was, oh, no, the New England Patriots are going to go 18-0 and win the Super Bowl. They're even better than last year. Well, now look at the Patriots sitting at 2-2 with the same record as the New York Jets. How's that working out for a 40-year-old Tom Brady? It's not working out too well. They're sitting there with the same record as the Raiders, so I can't talk too much shit. 2-2 for the Patriots. It's got to be disappointing. But for the Panthers, on the flip side, this is a huge win, huge for the momentum, huge for Cam Newton. They improved to 3-1 and possibly could be looking like a playoff team if this offense can put up the numbers that they did today. And Luke Kuechly, who was flying all over the field after the game, they said Bill Belichick was just gushing over this guy's talent at middle linebacker. Hey, I've been saying it for years. There's only one Luke, and he is the best linebacker in the league. I would love to have a guy like that on the Raiders. Anybody similar, a knockoff version, a Walmart version, I don't care. Give me a piece of Luke Kuechly on the Raiders because that guy is amazing, and he definitely helped the Panthers win 33-30 over the Patriots. We'll stick with another matchup between the NFC South and the AFC East as the Saints and the Dolphins faced off in London. Hello, London. Once again, we had an early slate of games starting off at 6:30 here on the West Coast as the Dolphins got shut out in London. You know, just a couple weeks ago, I posed the argument of I think the Jaguars and the Dolphins, they got to argue over who's really London's team. Well, it's looking like the Jaguars because the Dolphins are the first team to ever get shut out in London. Ever. Forever, ever, forever, ever. And man, it's got to be utterly disappointing because Jay Ajayi, the first London-born skill player in the NFL, just got shut down. Only had 12 carries for 46 yards. And London got their first taste of smoking Jay Cutler as he only throws for 164 yards in INT. And one, I don't give a fuck about anybody. Because if you guys saw Jay Cutler in that Wildcat formation, literally all he needed was a cigarette in his hand to complete the meme because the guy looked like he didn't even want to be out there. And it looked like the Dolphins didn't even want to be out there because they got shut out, like I said, for the first time ever at London. You got shut out against the Saints. The New Orleans ain't no defense Saints. This is ridiculous. It's their first shutout since 2012. 5 years this defense hasn't shut out nobody, and you shit the bed in London with the biggest London-born superstar in the league. The Dolphins did lose an embarrassing game, 20-0. And then let's go ahead and finish off the AFC East. I already told you the Jets improved the 2-2 and have the same record as the New England Patriots. Can't believe those words just came out of my mouth. But yes, they got the win in overtime against the Jacksonville Jaguars. This was an utterly disappointing game from the Jaguars after being in London the week before and absolutely putting on a show against the Baltimore Ravens. They refused to show up as this defense for the Jets stepped up with Jamal Adams and a lot of these young playmakers. They're actually looking like a decent, formidable team. I talked all that shit about the Jets against the Raiders because we absolutely destroyed them. But Josh McCown still throws for over 224 yards, and it's Bilal Powell who has a huge game with 21 carries for 163 yards and one touchdown with no Matt Forte. This was all Bilal Powell, and the Jets got it done on the ground as Leonard Fournette tried to do everything he could to keep the Jaguars in this game with 24 carries, 86 yards, 4 catches, 59 yards, and a touchdown. But Blake Bortles is going to be Blake Bortles, and he only throws for 140 yards, one touchdown, and one big INT to seal his fate. And the Jaguars cannot capitalize as there was another AFC South division matchup between the Tennessee Titans and the Houston Texans. And the Texans put in that work on the Tennessee Titans. This was the biggest beatdown on the Titans from the Texans since I seen Andre Johnson beat the shit out of Courtland Finnegan because the Texans put that work on him 57-14. That's a franchise record. Yeah, you might ask, what franchise record? Hell, that's every franchise record. Franchise record for most points by the Texans, franchise record by most touchdowns by a rookie quarterback. Hell, I think that's an NFL record for most touchdowns by a rookie quarterback. Deshaun Watson had 5 of them on the day, 4 through the air, and 1 on the ground as he has a huge day connecting with DeAndre Hopkins, who had 10 catches, 107 yards, with one touchdown to move the number 2 all-time on the Houston Texans receiving list. As I mentioned, beats by Dre ain't never going to get caught, but the way that they beat the Titans in this game, it looked like Andre Johnson was back suiting up for the Texans as there was just bad news for the Titans. Marcus Mariota, 96 yards, 2 interceptions, and injures his hamstring. I don't know if him and Derek Carr are cycled up, if they got the same horoscopes or what, but they got injured on the same day once again in this exotic rush offense for this Tennessee Titans offense got completely shut down. Mariota was the leading rusher, and they had no answer as the Texans embarrassed them at home 57-14. And then let's wrap up the AFC South with the Indianapolis Colts getting their asses kicked on Sunday Night Football against the Seattle Seahawks 46-18 as the Seattle Seahawks put the work on Jacoby Brissett in his backup offense for the Colts. I said all year, I'm not picking a Colts until Andrew Luck comes back. And there's good news for the Colts. Andrew Luck is actually practicing this week, but that didn't help him all Sunday Night Football as the Seahawks defense, the Legion of Boom, just absolutely dominated the Colts, had 2 defensive touchdowns, and this game was over by halftime. And they ended up winning 46-18 to improve the 2-2 in that NFC West. And let's go ahead and talk about an NFC West division matchup as this is the base his golden days. And we used to talk about the 49ers a lot until my man Harneet moved off to London. I guess he's a couple weeks late for these NFL London games, but he's still going to enjoy his Santa Clara 49ers charging for that number one draft pick as the plan stayed in session. But hey, this is exactly what we talked about all last year on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. Every time we talked about the 49ers, you want to see progress and you want to see them lose. Progress to lose, because if they would have took Deshaun Watson last year, hey, that pick would look great. But this defensive line is coming around for this 49ers defense. Solomon Thomas has looked pretty good this year, but it has been DeForest Buckner who is enjoying a breakout year for the San Francisco 49ers defensive line as they were sacking Carson Palmer left and right. And Carson really didn't even have a game until he got to overtime, because this was field goal, 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 field goal. Touchdown! Cardinals win in overtime as they walk off, because the Niners could have won this game. They dominated the ball in overtime, held it for 8 of the 10 minutes. Carlos Hyde almost fumbled twice, but he was able to run down the field. He only had 68 yards, dealing with a hip injury. It was not his best day, but he still got the job done, moving the ball for the 49ers, and it came so close. Got all the way down to, I think, 15-10-yard line. Could not convert on third down and had to settle for a field goal in overtime, leaving Carson Palmer only a couple minutes left on the clock. And that's all he needed, because he sliced through this 49ers defense like he was on a gold mining mission back in 1949. And he struck gold as he finds Larry Fitzgerald in the end zone once again. Old, reliable, OG Larry Fitzgerald gets the walk-off touchdown. And the Cardinals win 18-15 to improve to 2-2 in this NFC West division. And then we're going to wrap it up with a couple division matchups. We got the NFC North squaring off. Thursday Night Football, we all saw the Packers absolutely take care of the Bears. Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, once again, two more touchdowns. I've talked about the connection that these two got. Put them both in the Hall of Fame already, because they are truly a legendary quarterback-wide receiver duo as they continue to just torch this whole entire NFC North division. Aaron Rodgers had four touchdowns on a day and didn't even need to break 200 yards. That's how easy he took care of the Bears, while on the flip side, Mike Glennon struggled once again, and so did his backfield for Chicago, Tariq Cohen. We thought it was going to be a huge matchup out of the backfield. He didn't really have too big a game, as well as Jordan Howard, who did find the end zone with 18 carries for 53 yards on a day. But Mike Glennon continues his struggle. Two more interception and his time is done. It's Trubisky time. It's official. Mitch Trubisky is going to be starting Monday Night Football for the first time in his career, but we'll get more into that in our Straight Cash Homie betting segment. Let's keep it moving in the NFC North, as we had another division matchup between the Lions and the Vikings, and the Lions were able to pull off a huge win, 14-7, as Case Keenum only throws for 219 yards, and the Vikings get a devastating blow to their offense. Dalvin Cook, torn ACL, done for the year. We'll see what Tay Train and Latavius Murray can bring to that backfield now. But this is truly a sad story, where we've talked about Vikings defense all year long and how this offense is finally starting to put it together. Now it's looking like Dalvin Cook losing a year. It's really looking like he's filling the shoes of Adrian Peterson going down with an ACL injury. I didn't want to say it, but I had to. And now they're screwed. But hey, if I'm the Vikings, I call back up the Saints and say, hey, let's redo that trade. Give us back AP. Let's see what we can do. But the Lions were truly the benefactor of all these injuries and this bad quarterback play, as Matthew Stafford once again throws for over 200 yards and Amir Abdullah rushes 20 times for 94 yards. And the Lions get a huge division victory, 14-7, which means we only got one division left, and that's the AFC North, as we had a couple games go down between the Bengals, the Browns, the Steelers, and Ravens. And this is always a fun one to watch. The Bengals took care of the Browns 31-7. Dalton threw for four touchdowns with 286 yards, and this is looking like a whole completely different Andy Dalton since the first 2 weeks of the season. I mentioned it on our preview podcast that Andy Dalton should have the best year of his career, and since they have fired their offensive coordinator after the first couple weeks, he's now 46 for 57, 498 yards, and six touchdowns. No INTs. Andy Dalton is playing a lot better football, and Joe Mixon has taken over that backfield, looking like the best running back, but he was contained for 29 yards on 17 carries, and it was Tyler Kroft, not even A.J. Green. Croft, who had 68 yards, two touchdowns, filling in for an injured Tyler Eifert. DeShone Kizer struggled once again, 118 yards and an interception, as things just get worse and worse for the Browns. I told you they'd be better than last year, but they're still looking like the 0-4 Cleveland Browns, and Hugh Jackson is going to have to start winning a game here and there if he wants to stay off the hot seat in that division with all these teams and all these coaches. Hell, it's going to be interesting to see who gets fired first between Hugh Jackson or Marvin Lewis. Hey, Marvin Lewis got the win, so he's a little bit safer right now as the Bengals get their first win of the year to improve to 1-3. But let's go ahead and look at the division leader as the Steelers improved to 3-1 over the Baltimore Ravens. They got the win 26-9, and it was the first time that the Steelers have won in Baltimore since 2012. Wrap your mind around that one. Baltimore always plays great at home, but Joe Flacco blatantly came out and said, "I sucked." Yep, and I'll be there to back you up, Joe Flacco. You suck. You threw for 235 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions. That makes it an interception in 10 straight games. That's the longest streak in the entire NFL. Joe Elite Flacco, what happened to the elite? What happened to your Super Bowl run when you didn't even throw an interception in the whole entire playoffs? Now you're throwing interception in 10 straight games. Joe Flacco's got to figure it out or give back some of that money or go buy some more goddamn chicken nuggets, because who knows what's going to fix Joe Flacco as they got embarrassed at home against the Steelers 26-9. Ben Roethlisberger threw for 216 yards, a touchdown, and had an INT, but it was Le'Veon Bell who finally got his touches in. 35 carries, 144 yards, and two touchdowns. He also had four receptions. That brings him to a total of 39 total touches on a day. 39. Hey, I guess his holdout hangover is finally over. Le'Veon Bell, have yourself a day, kid. And it was Martavis Bryant who led Steelers in receiving. We saw Antonio Brown blow up on a sideline, start flipping coolers left and right. Well, hey, Antonio, calm the fuck down. Y'all won the game. It's not that big of a deal. Y'all were shutting out the Ravens in the first half anyways. I know he wants the ball. He wants to be fed, and he's the best wide receiver in the league. He should be fed, but it's Ben Roethlisberger. How long have you guys known each other? How long have you guys stuck together? And you're winning the game regardless. So I do think it was a bit of an overreaction from Antonio Brown. Antonio, relax, my man. Go roll one up with Martavis Bryant and celebrate the win, because you guys are in first place in the NFC North. And hey, we should all be celebrating because the Steelers covered the spread and won you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. But if we're going to start talking about point spreads, y'all know what time it is.
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. It's time for week 5 of the NFL Straight Cash, homie, here on the Bay's Golden Days. And of course, we're going to start off with the Raiders and the Ravens. The Raiders return home to be a 2.5 favorite over the Ravens. I think this is going to be a huge game with EJ Manuel starting at quarterback. The biggest factor to me is going to be this offensive line and running the ball. The Baltimore Ravens are allowing over 121 rushing yards per game. We saw what Le'Veon Bell did to them last week. Marshawn Lynch, strap your boots in. Town business is going to be in the motherfucking building. He needs to have a huge day, and I want to see Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington mixed in more and more and more. Give them 10 carries each. I want to see 30 carries by the Raiders. I want to see them control the line of scrimmage. I want to see them control time of possession battle, and I want to see this offense get into a flow. We're going to need some help. We'll see if Crabtree is back this weekend. It's got to get things mixed with Jared Cook over the middle, slot Roberts, Cordell Patterson, even put him in the backfield. This offense is going to need to find ways to get creative without Derek Carr, and I think if our defense plays the way that we did last week, I think we'll have an opportunity. I look for Khalil Mack, surprise, surprise, to once again have a big day and be a huge contributor for this offense. Gerrion Conley, I'm hoping that he can play with those shin injuries, because I think the only way that the Ravens can beat us is with the deep ball. Joe Flacco taking shots to Mike Wallace, taking shots to Rashard Perriman, taking shots to whoever he can get the ball downfield to. I think that's the Ravens' only hope, as they're struggling at running back. They're struggling to move the ball. Their offensive line is not that great, but Joe Flacco still has that big arm. But as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, he has thrown an interception in 10 straight games. I want Carl Joseph to come up with a turnover. I want to see Reggie Nelson, Gerrion Conley, hell, Sean Smith, David Anderson, if you're back. Somebody's got to create a turnover for this Raiders defense, and let's get one on special teams too. We got to make points besides our offense. I want a defense pick six, take it to the house, or Khalil Mack, strip sack, scoop and score TD. The Raiders are going to need to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, run the ball down the Ravens' throat, and stop that deep ball, and I will take the Raiders to win at home, -2.5 points. And then let's go ahead and look at Thursday Night Football. We got the Patriots and the Buccaneers in the return of Doug Martin. Yes, the muscle hamster is finally off his suspension, and he will get his first crack at this Patriots defense that has truly been terrible through the first half of the season. Hell, I shouldn't even say terrible. It has been historically bad through the first half of the season. The Buccaneers are the underdogs, as the Patriots are road favorites. 5.5 points. hey, home underdogs on primetime games usually come out to play. I haven't liked the Patriots plus the spread all year, but that's because they've been at 12 points, 14 points, 16 points. Well, now it's down to a modest 5.5. That means the Patriots only got to win by a touchdown. I think Tom Brady does come back and get the win for the Patriots, so I will take the Patriots minus the 5.5 points. Moving on to Sunday now. No more London games. All the games start at 10 here on the West Coast. The Bills and the Bengals will face off against each other in Cincinnati. The Bengals are 3-point favorites. Hey, you know they usually give the home team 3 points, so this is really a pick'em game. And if I got to pick between the Bills and the Bengals, well, judging so far what I've seen this year, the Bills just beat the Broncos and the Falcons, while the Bengals looked completely terrible the first couple weeks. I mentioned Andy Dalton has turned it around these past couple weeks after getting a new offensive coordinator, but I don't think against his Bills defense that just shut down Matt Ryan, I don't think Andy Dalton has a good day. I will take the Bills +3 on the road in Cincinnati. Moving on to the Jets and the Browns. The Cleveland Browns are favored in a game. Yeah, woohoo. They're favored by 1 point over the Jets. The Jets showed up last week and beat the Jaguars, which might be a step in the right direction. But I think the Jets are actually a worse team than the Browns were last year. I didn't expect the Jets to win a game this year. I thought they'd be tanking, but here they are 2-2. The Browns own 4, but I got to stand up for my boy Hugh Jackson, the ex-Raider coach, building a bully out there in Cleveland. I think Cleveland gets their first win of the year, so give me Cleveland -1 at home. DeShone Kizer will have his best game of the season against his Jets defense. The Panthers and the Lions is going to be a great matchup. Lions are favored by 3 at home. We know what Matthew Stafford can do when he's playing in that dome, but Carolina last week beating the Patriots, I like their momentum that they're on right now. Cam Newton said this isn't no instant grit offense. You got to prepare this shit. You got to marinate it. And I think the Panthers are finally turning around. They're getting Christian McCaffrey involved a lot in that passing game. And I think with this high power offense, Luke Kuechly back, I've mentioned in our preseason podcast, if he stays and plays the whole entire year, he could single-handedly vault that defense into a top 10 defense and get him a wild card potential playoff spot. I will take the Panthers on the road +3 points. The 49ers and the Colts. Man, oh man, is this an interesting one? I got to show some love here on the Bay's Golden Days because I said I would never pick the Colts as long as Andrew Luck isn't starting. And I can't go against my word, so I guess I got to pick the 49ers. They are a 1.5-point underdog. If Carlos Hyde is healthy with that hip injury, I expect him to have his biggest game of the season. The 49ers have been in competitive games so far this year, so I'll give them credit for that. Against the Cardinals last week, I didn't think the game would be that close. If they can keep this game close against the Colts, I think they might finally sneak one out. And I look for the 49ers, if they don't get their first win of the year, to at least cover the point spread. So I will take the 49ers and the points. The Titans and the Dolphins is an interesting one where they have the Dolphins favored by 1 point in Miami. We're still not sure the status of Marcus Mariota yet. If Marcus Mariota plays, I'm taking the Titans all day as the road underdogs. I don't like Miami Dolphins at all this season. Smoking Jay Cutler, I haven't said one good thing about him, I don't think, besides smoking cigarettes every single day. What does this guy do for a living? Got shut out by the Saints last week. Yes, I'll let that marinate again, even though I already told you. He got shut out by the Saints for the first time since 2012. It was utterly embarrassing. I cannot pick the Dolphins to win a game over the Titans, who I picked to be a playoff team. Even if they don't got Marcus Mariota, I'm still rolling with the Titans on the road, +1 point. Moving on to the Chargers and the Giants. I think this is going to be a shootout. Look for the over on this one. The Giants are favored by 3.5. This is two teams that are 0-4. This is two teams with quarterbacks drafted in 2004. This is two teams that used to be in the playoffs in 2004. And they're both looking for the first win. Phillip Rivers versus Eli Manning. The controversy of who's going to be on which team. Maybe just all these year laters, they should finally switch them. Phillip Rivers should go to the Giants. And Eli should go to the Chargers because now they're in L.A. His dad didn't want him playing in San Diego. Well, hey, they're an L.A. team now. Either way, I think this is going to be a shootout. And who's going to choke away the game? The Giants or the Chokers? Giants are favored about 3.5, which means they got to win by more than a field goal, which means I think I might just take the Chargers and the points because I think the Chargers will have this in a field goal range matchup at late in the game. But Young Hoku is probably going to miss. The Chargers will miss the kick, and the Chargers will lose by 3 points, which means they still will cover the spread. So give me the Chargers on the road, +3.5 points. The Cardinals and the Eagles are up next. The Eagles are 6.5-point favorites over the Cardinals. Cardinals, I guess they kept the game close last week against the Niners, but that's not an impressive thing to do. And the Eagles are playing great right now. Carson Wentz with all these new weapons. They finally got the run game going last week. LeGarrette Blount. I'll take the Eagles -6.5 to win by a touchdown at home over the
Cardinals, the Jaguars, and the Steelers. Give us our biggest point spread of the week as the Steelers are favored by 8.5 points. The Jaguars were beat by the Jets, but the Jaguars did put up a good showing against the Ravens just a few weeks ago. This is going to be an interesting matchup. Antonio Brown versus Jalen Ramsey is the matchup I'm going to keep my eye on all day. Jalen Ramsey, one of the best young up-and-coming corners in the league with this Jacksonville Jaguars defense. They'll try to contain A.B., Le'Veon Bell, all the killer bees with Ben Roethlisberger. And at the end of the day, I can't bet on Blake Bortles. He'll probably throw an interception late in the game, turn the ball over, or do something stupid. I want to see Leonard Fournette against this defense, though, from the Steelers. That's going to show a lot, but I will take the Steelers minus 8.5 points. The Jaguars actually could keep us close, so if I'm not buying other points, this is a point spread that I actually want to stay away from. The Seahawks and the Rams are up next, and the Rams are favored by 1.5 point at home over the Seahawks. Is this 2001? Are we watching the greatest show on turf? Like, if I would have told you before the season that the Rams were going to be favored over the Seahawks, you would have told me to go fuck myself. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense at all. I know the Rams have looked great, are averaging 35.5 points per game, but they have yet to face an elite defense. I think they get a reality check this week against the Seattle Seahawks. I will take the Seahawks on the road with the Legion of Boom to say, hey, Jared Goff, let's tone it down a bit. You're not an NFL elite superstar yet. But if this is the game that Jared Goff goes off, then I'm sold. Like I've said so far, I'm not sold yet after tearing up the Niners, the Colts, and the Cowboys defense. That's what quarterbacks in the NFL should be doing. But if he goes off against the Legion of Boom, the man will have my respect, but I don't think it's going to happen. Give me the Seahawks plus 1.5 points. The Packers and the Cowboys should be a shootout on Sunday afternoon in Dallas. The Cowboys are favored by 2 points. This is a game I'm going back and forth on all week, and I'll probably go back and forth on all week. Look for the over to be covered. I think if the Cowboys can come out and get Ezekiel going quick, then they should win. If not, and they get down early like they did last year in the playoffs, then Aaron Rodgers could keep this lead up and win this game. I think if the Packers get the ball first, they win. If the Cowboys get the ball first, they win. Two completely different styles of offense, two completely different game plans. The Packers want to go up big and make the Cowboys pass to keep up, and the Cowboys want to get the ball first, score, and then continually just run the ball, run the clock, and win the time of possession battle. If they're able to win the time of possession battle, the Cowboys got a chance. But Aaron Rodgers, the way he's been playing the last 2 weeks, I don't think there's going to be anybody on his Dallas defense that's going to be able to stop Jordy Nelson. So I will take the Packers plus 2 points against the Cowboys. Moving on to the Sunday night football game now, we got a matchup between the Chiefs and the Texans. As I mentioned, Deshaun Watson setting rookie records by having 5 touchdowns last week. He threw for 4, rushed for 1. The guy has looked phenomenal, but now he gets his first real test of an NFL elite defense. The Chiefs will be on Sunday Night Football back-to-back primetime games, and this is going to be a great matchup between DeAndre Hopkins, Marcus Peters. Who's going to get the edge in that one? Will Fuller came back last week and was huge for this Texans offense. Lamar Miller has been running the ball pretty well, but not a lot of people have success running the ball on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think this is going to be an interesting matchup. The Chiefs are favored by 1.5 points on the road, and they're the best team in football right now. They're undefeated, so I'm going to have to stick with the AFC West and stick with the Chiefs to give Deshaun Watson his first reality check, and I'll take the Chiefs minus 1.5 points as we get to Monday Night Football, where we got a division matchup in the NFC North between the Vikings and the Bears. The Vikings are favored by 3.5 points. But without Dalvin Cook, this offense scares me. To be honest, Latavius Murray is still not 100% back from that ankle injury in the beginning of the year that gave Dalvin Cook the starting job. The Bears offense doesn't scare me either. But with Jordan Howard and now Mitchell Trubisky taking over, is it Trubisky time? Is the era about to take off in Chicago? Hell, he better look better than Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson already got a couple wins. Mitch Trubisky, the number one pick, getting his first career start on Monday Night Football. The only other quarterback to do that was Aaron Rodgers. Can Trubisky get on the same career path as Aaron Rodgers? It's too damn early to say that, but I will take the Bears to have the upset Monday Night Football. Mitch Trubisky has got to be a great feel-good story, getting his first win Monday Night Football against a tough Vikings defense. Hell, I'll flip the coin and I'll take it. Give me the Bears plus the 3.5 points. And that wraps up Straight Cash, homie, for week 5 here on the Bay's Golden Days. Let me give you a quick rundown in case you just want to skip all the blah, blah, blah and get straight to the points and the money. On Thursday night
Night Football. I will take the Patriots to win -5.5 points. I will take the Raiders on Sunday -2.5 points over the Ravens. I like the Bills to upset the Bengals +3 points. The Jets and the Browns face off, and the Browns are going to get their first win of the year -1 point. The Panthers and the Lions, I like the Panthers plus the upset +3. The 49ers and the Colts, we batted them up for the 49ers first win of the year. I'll take the 49ers +1.5. The Titans and the Dolphins face off. It's going to be depending on Marcus Mariota. I will take the Titans -1. The Chargers and the Giants, give me the Chargers +3.5, but they will choke away the loss, and the Giants will probably win. The Cardinals and the Eagles, give me the Eagles -6.5 to win by a touchdown. The Jaguars and the Steelers, I'll take the Steelers, but that 8.5 point spread does scare me. The Seahawks and the Rams, I'm taking the Seahawks to upset the Rams +1.5 points. The Packers and the Cowboys, I'm taking the Packers to upset the Cowboys +2 points. The Chiefs and the Texans Sunday Night Football, I'm taking the Chiefs -1.5 points. And on Monday Night Football, welcome to Trubisky time. Give me the Bears plus the upset +3.5 points. Put it in the books, and hopefully we can win you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days during our Straight Cash Homie betting segment. Regardless if we win, regardless if we lose, we're going to be right here, same spot, same time, same place next week. The Bay's Golden Days podcast, always breaking down the Raiders. Win, lose, or die, it's Raider Nation till we motherfucking die. I don't know how many times I got to say 2-2. The season ain't over. I still have the Raiders as a playoff team. I'm still coming for that AFC West spot. Hey, we got to take care of the Ravens this week. EJ Manuel, enter Jesus Manuel. Please save us while the Lord and Savior Derek Carr is down for a couple weeks. But hey, Raider Nation, we got to stay strong. Be patient and just wait for the return to greatness. If you're done with the Raiders now, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to hop the fuck off the bandwagon. We didn't want you riding with us from the beginning of the season when all the talking heads are picking us all of a sudden now and everyone wants to be a Raider fan. Hey, if you weren't with us during Derek Carr and Khalil Mack and Gabe Jackson's 0-10 start, don't hop on the train now. You ain't with us. You ain't riding with us. This is Raider Nation, bitch. This is the Bay's Golden Days. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, whatever your favorite social media is, at Bay's Golden Days. You can download and subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. And check out our website, bgdsports.com. You know what it is, Bay's Golden Days.
Steady gold, pony boy.